HPPodCraft.com.
Original fiction.
The baby downstairs. There is a baby living in the apartment downstairs. It's living by itself. 2 days ago, I saw it crawling around by the mailbox, nobody watching it. I was on my balcony and I saw it in the night. I heard it gurgling. I called the police. My heart wouldn't stop racing. The baby was gone before the policeman showed up. He arrived, knocked, and I heard the apartment door open. The door closed. That policeman never came out again. I'm telling you, he never came out again. Yesterday, the same thing happened, like a rerun. I saw the baby crawl out, grab some mail, crawl back in. I called the police. The officer came, nodded to me on the balcony, and disappeared into the apartment forever. Hours later, I walked the street looking for deserted cop cars. There was nothing but the night and people in their TV rooms. The baby downstairs knows how to cover its tracks. A neighbor saw me peering into the baby's windows today and I jumped, caught. I blurted that a baby was living in there alone, in an apartment I could never afford. Could he believe it? The neighbor walked away, suspicious. Enthralled to the baby, no doubt. Earlier tonight, I heard scratching at my front door, down at the bottom where a cat might scratch. When I opened the door, there was only a filthy rattle on the ground with the scrawled note underneath that caused me to run off into the night. Incoherent. A shattered parody of a man. Don't make me come up here again. Sincerely, the baby downstairs.
Two cats on a ledge. Two house cats gazed through an open window. "I can't believe it," exclaimed the young orange tabby. "There's no screen. We could run right out." "That's why the stranger is here," noted his older, steel-gray sister. She tilted her head to study the broad-shouldered workman whose entrance had interrupted their afternoon nap. The man placed the old screen on the floor, a new one shining in the late afternoon sun next to it. "You scratched a hole in the wire, so our woman is having the whole thing replaced."
"I didn't scratch a hole in it," the tabby shot back. "I was just holding on while I stretched, but then I forgot myself and I tried to leap away. My claw was caught. It was an accident."
He nuzzled his own shoulder, remembering the hurt. His sister raised a hind leg and scratched at her chin, observing the workman. Instead of mounting the new screen, he wandered over to their woman's closet.
"Oh, how I've longed to walk out on that ledge," said the tabby, his eyes dilating as he watched the breeze play with the curtains. "I want to know where those birds go after they taunt us. Do they live with their own woman in another apartment like this?"
The sister watched the workman take a silk blouse from the closet, smooth it across the small kitchen table, then begin to unsnap his own checkered button-up.
"I doubt it," she said, "but there's only one way to find out."
In three quiet hops, the steel-gray cat was on the windowsill.
"What are you doing?"
"Come up here and keep watch. I'm going to scout ahead." And then she was gone. The tabby looked at the man, who was busy removing his undershirt, and then leapt after his sister through the window. Outside on the ledge, the world was very different.
"We are much higher in the sky than I thought," the tabby said, his words seeming to blow away across the sprawling cityscape. "Much higher!
Just keep an eye on the man," his sister called back over the airy cacophony of the traffic far below. She disappeared around the corner of the building, and a blast of wind swatted the high-rise. The tabby's claws skittered against the concrete as he danced in place. His heart swelled to fill his entire body, and the abyss called to him with a great throaty yawn.
"Sister!"
he wanted to shout, but stopped. He didn't want to be afraid, but he was. He looked down at the distant ground and sniffed the air, then drew into himself, shivering.
The birds never seem to be afraid, he thought. Those rotten birds. He could see another apartment window to his left, just like the one from which he'd emerged. He tested his balance, edging toward it a bit. I'll bet that's where those birds live, he thought, purring with menace. Sister hasn't scouted here yet. I'd better check. Cold winds probed the delicate pink skin under his fur as he crept forward. He imagined that through the window he'd see a variety of birds lounging in leather chairs, grooming each other, and making small talk as their women served treats. He couldn't wait to watch them scramble in fear when a cat appeared on the ledge outside, giving them a taste of their own taunts. First he would make sad eyes at their woman until she opened the window and let him in. Then he would murder them all. His bloody thoughts were interrupted by a sound. A loud, wooden thunk. What was that? He looked back to see his sister's head pop out from around the corner, her eyes narrowing. The man shut the window, he cried. Unable to turn around on the narrow concrete, he was forced to creep backward along the ledge until he was in front of their window again. As he sidled up against the glass and rotated to face his sister, he saw the man inside, walking away. He was wearing their woman's blouse, and he rubbed at his exposed shoulders, cold. You fool! His sister stalked toward him. You weren't watching. They both peered into the apartment. The man had removed his pants and was trying to squeeze into a long black skirt. What do we do? The tabby's heart was beating so fast, he was afraid it might race up through his throat and take a suicidal leap into the void. He and his sister were outsiders now. Homeless, cursed to roam this narrow ledge until they died. Will we become birds now? Is that how it works? He was sorry about wanting to kill all of those ex-house cats, if that's what they actually were. His sister softened when she saw the panic in his eyes. She gave him a reassuring lick across the face. Listen closely, brother. You are young and prone to distraction. But always remember the lesson of this mistake. If you wish to gain your heart's desire in this life, you must do what you are doing when you are doing it.
I don't understand.
When you were stretching at the screen, your mind wandered. You leapt and were hurt. I asked you to watch the man while I scouted the ledge, but once again, you were diverted. Now we are barred from our home and trapped in the sky.
I'm sorry.
The tabby felt ashamed at his folly. I was much like you once in the orphanage. When I was playing with the other cats, I thought only of eating. When I was eating, I thought only of rest. But instead of sleeping, I often sat awake, wondering when I would play next. Then our woman visited, and I focused on nothing but gaining her favor. I allowed no distractions, and she took me in. I learned my lesson. Now, I play when I am playing. I eat when I am eating. I sleep when I am sleeping. Instead of wasting thought on the past or future, I do what I'm doing when I'm doing it. Understand?
I think so. But what do we do now?
We wait for our woman. And there she is. The cats peered through the glass as their woman entered the apartment. She and the workman froze, staring at each other, his hand still fiddling with the skirt. He let go, and it dropped to the floor around his ankles. The woman screamed at the top of her lungs and hit the man with her purse. He scrambled to snatch his crumpled clothes from the floor. You see, said the steel gray cat. Like you, the man was distracted and didn't do his job. Now she is teaching him the same lesson.
Afraid of Dobermans.
You've gotta be kidding me!
Mort stood up. He and his family were watching a TV documentary about different dog breeds. The woman on the television was an elderly neighbor, Carrie Mason, and she was being interviewed about her lifelong fear of Dobermans. As she spoke, these words appeared on screen. Carrie Mason, afraid of Dobermans. Previous interviewees in the documentary had actual titles under their names, like veterinarian or breeder. As a result, it now looked like Carrie was afraid of Dobermans for a living.
Like it's her job or something?
Mort shouted, throwing the remote onto the coffee table and startling his daughters, who sat cross-legged on the floor.
I'm the one who's afraid of Dobermans!
Mary, his wife, pulled him back onto the couch. She had been afraid this might happen. Earlier that summer, a camera crew had come around to the local park while they were playing with the girls, interviewing people about their dogs. They'd never had a dog, but Mort somehow got on camera anyway and explained all the many, many reasons why Dobermans are assholes. He actually used that word, assholes.
You can't trust a one of them, he'd concluded. Make sure you get that in there.
Mort signed the release, found out what channel the show would be on, and then took the family out for ice cream. Mary could tell he was thrilled to be the center of attention, if only for a moment. He'd watched the TV schedule for months, waiting for his big appearance. A group of puppies were frolicking on screen.
Cute!
One of the girls shouted.
Those puppies are bullshit!
Mort said, red-faced. The girls were quiet for the rest of the documentary, even during the commercials. Then it ended. The credits rolled. Mort kept watching, hoping for outtakes, some post-credit scene. Nothing. He wasn't in it at all. That night, he hatched a plan. He told Mary he was going to overcome his fear of Dobermans. It would be the only way to right the wrong that had been done to him. If all that comes out of this is that you're not afraid of those things anymore, then that's a good thing, Mary said. But he didn't tell her the truth of the plan. If he could overcome his fear, he could adopt a few Dobermans, train them to kill, and then let them loose on the neighbor who stole his 15 minutes of fame.
If Carrie's really so afraid, he thought, then it'll be extra special when they chew her to death.
Mary hated it when he chuckled to himself in the night. Eventually, Mort screwed up his courage and went to a Doberman breeder, asking to volunteer. Being up close to the animals was rough, but he stood his ground, even explaining to the woman that he was overcoming a phobia. Over the next few months, he learned all about Dobermans. With knowledge came comfort. Finally, he brought a puppy home. The girls wanted to name it Monkey. He wanted Killer, but then thought it might be too on the nose given the dog's ultimate purpose. They all settled on Keith. Things changed. Keith seemed to understand Mort far better than Mary or the kids. The dog only cared about simple things, and in time taught him how to care about simple things. It loved him unconditionally, which he had never experienced, raised as he was by vacant grandparents. Keith brought life to the house. Mort saw how lucky he was. The family felt more like a family. Mort adopted more Doberman puppies. For Christmases and birthdays, people brought him Doberman knickknacks. He put them all over the kitchen. He became something of an expert, then an author. The girls did all the illustrations for his book on raising the dogs, which was dedicated to Mary. Eventually, more TV people came to the neighborhood. They did some screen tests and then offered him a job on their channel. His show launched a year later, The Doberman. Big hit. The late-night comics even mentioned his name. By training people to raise Dobermans, Mort was also changing their lives. As he enjoyed this success, Mort often thought about Carrie Mason, the woman he had plotted to kill. She had moved away from the neighborhood years before, but he had been writing his book and didn't notice. He chuckled to himself when he thought about how he used to blame his problems on other people. He had been such a confused and violent person. It was probably about time to thank the woman, even if it meant admitting his ridiculous plan. Maybe he could even help her overcome her fear of the breed, like he had for so many others. He decided to look her up. That's when he discovered that Carrie was in an asylum on the East Coast. There had been a series of disappearances around the neighborhood where she had moved, young children, and she had been caught lurking in the bushes near a daycare. When the police brought her in, she raved about terrible things that filled the air around us unseen. Not long after, they found the bodies in her attic. Upon hearing this, Mort felt his stomach drop through the floor. He was a failure all over again. If he had only followed through with his original plan to kill Carrie Mason, all of those children would be alive today.
Afraid of Dobermans appears in the anthology Whispers from the Abyss by 01 Publishing. Two Cats on a Ledge appears in the anthology The Lion and the Aardvark, Aesop's Modern Fables by Stoneskin Press. The Baby Downstairs appears in the anthology Whispers from the Abyss 2 by 01 Publishing. All stories written by Chad Pfeiffer. Readings by Chad Pfeiffer and Heather Klinke. Thanks to the listeners of the H.P. Lovecraft Literary Podcast for making this audiobook possible.
HPPodcraft.com